Okay, we're back on Enemy Combatant Radio with In the Meantime. This is DJ Sweetie, and I'm talking with Lupe and Maria about St. Peter's Housing Committee and some of their work and where the state of housing and rent control and tenants' rights, etc., is in San Francisco. And you were just talking about the People's Plan. Maybe you could tell us again what that is and how was that organized and what is the, I guess the ultimate goal is to present stuff to the planning department or...
Yes, it's basically to have a zoning plan that would basically include all the needs of the community. Basically, it's made by the community for the community. Basically, the process that we followed is that we had several focus groups at the beginning of the process with people from the community, with tenants. You know, there's the different organizations that are part of MAC. So then we had people outreach different. People in the Mission and in San Francisco, we had a focus group. So what do people want? Like, what do we need? Like, we need more childcare system, more childcare centers. Great. You know, we need more schools, you know, great. We need more parks. So then after that, all that information was compiled and, there was a planner who was part of MAC, who basically helped put together this plan, the zoning plan, according to what the community had said were the most biggest needs.
He put into technical terms or something?
Yeah, it's kind of put in more into like a zoning plan that can be presented to the planning department.
Okay.
Because there's definitely, we can definitely go up there and be like, here's what we want. And, you know, like I mentioned before, like, you know, at least right now, like if we put something and say like, this is what we want, just, you know, without putting it into the language and everything that, you know, you need to put a zoning plan through, if anything, that's going to be one of the uses they're going to use. You know, like, this is not in the way that language we understand, because, you know, they don't understand, you know, what people are saying. So then...
Because they definitely don't usually formulate their plans by having people build an interactive model of the community they like to see.
Exactly. They're not used to that. They're like, what, you want input? You know?
Tell us about that, then.
So then what we did is that we had... At the Intersection for the Arts, there was basically people could build their own models, like literally, like build their own models of what they wanted. Like you could get little pieces of wood, you get pieces of, you know, paint and everything. People were just building what they wanted. They're like, oh, my house is right here. Let me build my house here. Let me build a park here, which was really incredible to see what people's vision was, mm-hmm. of what they wanted the community to be, which is different from which is so starkly different from what the planning department wants the community to be. There was more parks, there was more schools, there was more small businesses. You know, there wasn't all these plans to put on these high lofts. They were like, no, let's put in like family housing right here, you know?
Mm-hmm. So certainly nobody from our community is going to say, I'd really like the development of biotech.
Exactly.
I really think we should develop biological weapons right next door to me. No, that actually didn't come out in any of our meetings.
Surprisingly enough.
The planning department, it did come out of the planning department.
Yes. So basically we did that. And then after that, basically the people's plan was, you know, presented to the planning department. And then we had these huge people's assemblies where the planning department, more like an accountability session with the planning department. The planning department said, oh, well, you know, here's these three options. Here's these options of the different plans, the way it could go, you know. And people's plan was one of the options. And everybody there at the assemblies voted for the people's plan. They're like, well, you present all these two other options. What you think is a good idea, we still think the people's plan is a good idea. Because we created it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just makes sense, you know. So then we had a couple of those assemblies, and these were assemblies of like 300 people. There were 300, 400 people that were there, you know, to support the people's plan, to say, this is what we want in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a really good, it was a really good example of just like what people's investment is in trying in really saying what they want for their community. And I think that's one of the things that the planning department has said in the past, you know, that people aren't invested, they're not coming to the hearings, you know, we have these public hearings. Well, that's because you're not actually outreaching to the community. And also you're putting out developments and plans that are not for the community.
Right.
They're for a specific group of people. They're mostly for capitalists and for people who can pay, you know, who want to move in and kick the community out. So that's one of the biggest process. So that was one of the biggest things we did, which was the people's assemblies. And that was really, I think it was a really powerful thing to have for the planning department to see all these people with kids and elders and children and, you know, women and youth being there saying, this is what we want. Like, you're not listening to us.
And these aren't like the planning commission hearings that they have for 5 hours where only people who don't work or specifically do this can show up.
These basically were the hearings where they had to come to our neighborhood on our timeline and listen to us. And I think the other powerful aspect was actually the community getting to see each other. We got to see each other. We got to see holy crap, there are 399 other people who agree about this issue. There's all these people who took 2 hours out of their day to come here to talk about where should we build a park. Mm-hmm. And that's really that really changes the consciousness in our community about what are the issues, how can we solve them. Like, I'm not the only one who's worried about this. I'm not the only one whose landlord is trying to screw them, you know? I'm not the only one who thinks that one after-school center for 20 blocks is not cool. So I think that was the other part of it in addition to that. And certainly the level of crisis during the dot-com boom actually won us some defectors, you know? There were people in the planning department, people in, like, you know, middle-class context of UC Berkeley planning department, education system and stuff like that, who are like, wait a minute, what's really going on right now? How come nobody has housing? How come this guy has three houses and that person has to sleep in a shelter? That doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, the movement created that visibility and then won a lot of, you know, we won some defectors from that. And those are the people that helped to turn it into technical terms, the people that are now working on some of the long-term solutions like the community land trust and the people's plan, things that can build long-term affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, then let's talk about your own organization. I mean, right now, well, for how many years since you were started, you had a staff and kind of director situation. Is that right? And what prompted you to consider that or reconsider that and say you want to maybe move into a collective organization? How did that come about?
We don't have exact proof, but I do think that at the beginning of the organization, it was an all-volunteer committee of people who wanted to fight for rent control.
And how were decisions made? Did people vote, or was it a consensus thing, or was it just one person who kind of took input? And
I believe there was a voting situation, but we don't have, there's not a lot of good records about it, although there's some really cool newsletters and stuff like that, pictures of picnics. Yeah. That was definitely, it was definitely a community institution. And then we had the traditional nonprofit structure, director and staff and, you know, program staff, whatever. I don't know what they call it.
And I think it was, at least in the time that I've been there, there definitely has been, you know, I think having a staff and having a director, we just saw that there was definitely, like, more a difference in terms of, you know, who did the work. I mean, we all, you know, in terms of, like, the amount of work that was done and generally the amount of clarity that we all had in terms of what was happening in the organization with everybody, you know, in terms of also that, in general, I think we also felt that, you know, having a director kind of took away, like, the need in terms of having, like, how can I put it, everybody more be accountable to each other instead of just being accountable to a director. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's something that was really important for me, actually, that I always, even when I first started working there, like, I always felt like, okay, like, I almost felt like I was kind of in a collective, not in a certain extent, because, like, I felt I was accountable to my rest of my, you know, like, my compañeros, like, my coworkers, you know, like, I was always like, okay, if something happened in this organization, like, it's going to affect everybody, you know, and I think, but when you have, like, a director kind of staff situation, like, it all kind of, like, you feel you're only accountable to that one person, which is a director, you know?
And as we moved more towards organizing, I think individual people who were working in the organization started understanding that model, right? We're building collective power. And so in our organization, we moved more towards a more collective way of doing things. We made collective decisions about a lot of the big issues in our organization, even when we had the regular nonprofit structure, certainly in the last year of having that structure, because people were sort of coming to political consciousness about the need for collective power and seeing it working in our, you know, we were fighting for it in the tenant unions, right? Everybody should have a voice. We should reach consensus. And if we can't reach consensus, we should try and figure out what we need to do. And, you know, and voting in the Latino community, I mean, shoot, so many of our people are not allowed to vote under this racist system that it's a little bit awkward to be advocating for electoral work and then to be copying it in your organization. So I think that was also a shift of consciousness for us. And then becoming a collective was sort of a recognition of the transition that was already happening. And it was also, I think, a way...
You mean organically kind of already through consciousness?
Yeah, we were already starting to make a lot of the major decisions collectively. Nobody told anybody, you have to ask everybody. But it started becoming a regular practice. This is really important. This is what I think we should do, guys. What do you guys think? This is my recommendation. I work on this every day and you guys don't. But I want to make sure that you guys are in on this. And I think that led sort of naturally to us becoming a collective, recognizing where we were going and going there on purpose. And I think it also makes more opportunities for leadership development in our staff, mm-hmm. for supporting emerging leaders that are maybe former members or maybe new to organizing and from the community. This is a way to actually build people's investment and people's capacity and not just limit people to this is what you're supposed to do according to this grant. And so this is what you do at like this and like that. You know, it's actually everybody in on solving the whole organization's problems and crafting the whole organization's vision and stuff like that.
Was there resistance from the director, basically, or other people who maybe were what the advisors or the board of the nonprofit to this this change?
We actually made that decision collectively. just like we had made the other big decisions. We made the decision collectively to become a collective. We did like a straw poll, and there was a lot of options. There was have another director from the staff.
What do you mean, like a second director?
No, replace the director was leaving.
Oh, okay.
And that's when we decided, well, should we get another director? Mm-hmm. And then, well, the question was, should we get another director? And then we thought, or should we do something else? Should we have co-directors? Should we have a collective? What should we do? And we, as usual, had a very long meeting.
Yes.
And came out with something really exciting, which was a collective structure with, you know, the work of the director still happens. We still find a need for support and supervision and accountability, but it happens more collectively. And it's a way to build people's capacity, not just to do the work, but to lead the work.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry. I think there are definitely like we all come just from different orientations generally, like, you know, from the work that we've done, you know, like in terms of development, you know, and we're all different people and we also come from different just, you know, experiences. So I think there was definitely, we definitely had to talk more about like, what does it mean to be in a collective to a certain extent? Like, I feel like we really had to be like, well, you know, it's basically kind of doing what we've been doing, but more like formalizing it, you know, like in terms of making decisions together, you know, supporting each other, you know. So I think it was more just really being like, okay, well, this option sounds really good. Oh, it's a collective. Well, it's great. You know, let's do that. You know, and I think it's more that everybody who's there is invested in the organization, is invested in developing the organization. And I think we just wanted to find what the best way to do that was. And, you know, we found that at least a collective structure would provide that kind of support and would provide that kind of like that space for development. And also as we're developing our organizing work as well, that, you know, we're like, well, you know, we're trying to, like when I was saying before, that we're trying to create like collective power within our community. We're trying to, you know, form all these collaborations and, you know, and everything. So we thought this was the best way to be able to support that work as well, was to make, you know, decisions collectively and to be able to, basically, like, trying to set up as much of a non-hierarchical structure as possible. That's basically what we're trying to fight for in general.
And we think of it as a revolutionary experiment, you know? We're definitely all evaluating. There's a lot of evaluation goes on when you're in a collective. Okay. That's another reason we became a collective. We really like meetings. We thought we didn't have enough meetings.
Do you meet just every kidding. Day? Do you have a general meeting every day?
No.
Uh-huh. We have a weekly meeting, uh-huh. but, you know, other... evaluate, you know, like in support meetings, those happen separately. We're not like meeting every day for like 5 hours or anything.
And we're trying to see what will work. You know, maybe what we actually come out with is not exactly what we started off thinking about. I mean, certainly when I started working at St. Peter's, I didn't think we'd do organizing. I didn't think we'd do alliance building on a statewide level, let alone create international connections around land struggles. I didn't think we'd become a collective. You know, all of us, our imagination collectively is so much broader. Mm. And what we've been able to do, given the different people with the different strengths and visions that have come into the organization, has been really great. I also don't think it's a coincidence that we became a collective at the point where we became an all-women's organization. So,
how's
you know,
that?
Being gender oppressed in the society actually teaches you a lot about the need for working together and for solidarity interpersonally and for strong systems of accountability too. Mm. You know, it's not like we were just gonna, a lot of us were very careful about, well, we want to create a collective, but we want to create a collective that works. You know, a lot of us had done volunteer political work in collectives where there were still a couple of people who did all the work, you know?
That was my next question, actually.
Or a couple of people who made all the decisions. Sometimes the same ones. Not usually. And, you know, so that's something that we're still very conscious of. How do we do that? You know, an important thing for us is evaluation. Like, individually, I'm going to evaluate my own work. I'm going to ask my my coworkers to evaluate my work too, and we're going to do that in the spirit of collaboration and trust and building the organization and building each other's capacity to do the work. And it's not easy.
It takes trust, huh?
Yeah.
So basically, like every like we were talking about that, we're like, well, you know, it's not something that just happens, and then you're like, great, now we're a collective, everything's peachy keen, you know, like this isn't. It's like every day you have to remember you're in a collective. Every decision that you make, how you work with, you know, how you, you know, interact with your coworkers, your comrades, like every day you gotta remember you're in a collective. Like it's definitely a process that we're still going through, and we're still, you know, we're working out like, you know, kinks and things that we're like, well, this maybe doesn't work the way we thought it would. You know, and so like making just basically whole new processes for our organization, because whereas before it was a lot based on this, you know, director staff type of relationship, now we basically have to create whole new accountability structures and just, you know, basically for the with each other, you know, with the organization. And so I think it's definitely been a really good process also just for individually for everybody just to realize, you know, okay, so why, you know, how do we want to develop the organization? What's our commitment, you know, and what do we have to offer? But at the same time, it's like, you know, how can I support my comrades in doing that? You know, and what's our long-term vision for this organization? The fact that we can all create that together, like that's, I think that's an amazing opportunity to have. So I think we're still definitely working out what that means to be a collective, you know, and looking at and trying to look at other models also that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Is that, are you looking at other collectives, or have you done any kind of basic kind of research or studying, or is it kind of what you've brought in from your own past experiences, or how did you decide like what model to use?
Mostly people brought it from their own experiences. Luckily, our organization has a really deep set of experiences from all different kinds of people. I mean, we're an all Latino organization, but people come from different countries. Some people have participated in national liberation struggles in their countries. Some people had come from student movements in their countries or student movements here, or anti-intervention solidarity work in the U.S. Different kinds of organizations, and a lot of people had experiences with, well, you have a president and a secretary and you vote, and or you have a whole collective and everybody decides everything and your meetings take 12 hours, you know, and then people had some experience in between. And I think we tried to basically, it was like a ideological potluck kind of, everybody threw in what they knew and we're like, okay, that stuff didn't work, but I like this is cool. And we sort of we were able to do that based on the trust that we had built in the struggle, you know. Mm-hmm. If you fight with someone, I mean not fight with someone, alongside someone for a few years and you're building the fight and you're doing the phone calls and you're making the flyer, you know, it can build a lot of trust. And we are very careful to respect people's politics and people's experiences and be able to integrate them and be able to also integrate like people's analysis and people's sort of hopes also, you know, as well as like negative experiences, but also I would really like this, you know. And so I don't know if you want to add something.
I think also part of what we went through is that right before we decided to become a collective, we went through a lot of staff study in terms of looking at the different movements from around the world. Just in South Africa, we looked at, you know, Brazil, we looked at all the different movements, like Latin people movements, and we were like, wow, like they've been able to create all these changes, integrate these movements, you know, just basically a lot more based on more like collective organizing, you know. I think for me, like that really helped me put into perspective being like, wow, like they've been able to create all these movements, you know, by not having these structures that are set up here, like the nonprofit structure. And I think that was something that was really powerful to see, like what is very inspiring, but also at the same time is very like, wow, like this is what's happening. All these other, you know, movements are created more like by collectives, you know, it's not necessarily as much by, you know, this nonprofit structure of like, you know, very hierarchical, when one person has decision making power, everybody else kind of follows along. You know, that was something that was very useful to have before we started to become a collective.
And one of the things that we decided was important to keep from the previous structure was the division of labor. We didn't think that because everybody works on everything, everybody makes the important decisions, that everybody should make all the decisions and that everybody should just do all the work. We thought it's important for someone who has been doing outreach in the SROs day to day for 3 years to continue to do that and to have that position respected, that expertise that experience and to be able to bring proposals to the group and to be able to represent the group in collaborations and things like that. So, you know, it's there's certainly collectives that work that way, but sometimes people don't think of collectives that way. People think collective means everybody comes and does everything and then everybody's really tired. Yeah. And you also don't develop the sort of expertise, you know, and we want people to be experts in the struggle and we want people to develop a lot of strengths also, you know, we don't want to pigeonhole someone, you have to just do this, but we want to think about it as an organization. How do we accomplish our collective goals and how do each one of us have a role in that collective vision?
What about you still have a nonprofit kind of board structure, is that right? Or how does that jibe with that new structure?
We're fiscally sponsored, and so we have a board, and through that structure, we're in the process of creating a board made up of our members that would be the first step is that it would be a steering committee and that eventually that it would be the board of our organization. Mm-hmm. And because we see the need for a board, and we also feel like a board made up of sort of nice activists or housing people that we would like is not actually what we need. What we need is to create the capacity in our community to run our organization. And that's going to take a little more work because people, it's not a coincidence that people in our communities are not running organizations. Certainly the way things are set up. And so if we want to change that, we actually need to give people the opportunities to gain those skills, that experience, and feel the commitment from the organization, you know, not just they want to lead it, but we want them to lead it. And mm-hmm. we're going to support them in that.
Have you had any problems then with the fundraising aspect of it? Like in terms of there's now questions about where is your accountability for money that's given to you or whatever? Has that come up at all?
We have different ways of talking about our structure to different people because we do have a division of labor. And so a lot of times what funders and people are worried about is like, who does what? Who do I talk to about what? A lot of times they want to know who has the power here, which is, you know, we're not as interested in that part. But we certainly, we can certainly explain this person does this and this person does that. And we have supervision and these two people do the supervision. And we have someone who does the fiscal management and that's this person. You can talk to them.
Right.
So I think that's for us been important internally, but also externally, you know, because sometimes people can hear better. We have co-directorship. By everybody, you know, or by half the organization, basically. That's what we have. And so, you know, it's also a process of educating the people who support our organization
right.
and who believe in our work and are sort of maybe excited, maybe a little bit scared about what we're doing. But we see it as an opportunity to actually explore different models with people because we're not the only ones who say, hey, the people are losing the struggle, you know? I mean, there's people in City Hall who are like, yeah, poor people. Not doing so great, you know, not fighting as hard as they used to. What's that about? And we're like, that's about organization, you know? So I think, you know, that's a piece of it.
And I think with fundraising, it's always, something that we need to think about more like for long term, just kind of like what, you know, I think just what kind of, you know, I guess money, at least in the certain structure that we have right now, in terms of just generally with having a nonprofit. It's definitely, you're limited to what kind of funding you can definitely, you know, get, you know, kind of contracts, da, da, da. But I think we're being very conscious also about that in terms of like, you know, what kind of funding right now we're going for in terms of like, you know, making sure that it reflects the work of the organization, then definitely reflects like the basic principles of the organization instead of the other way around. Instead of that, you know, the funds themselves dictate what we're doing, which is what we definitely want to avoid because then that's basically being moved like by the money and that's not going to build tenant power. That's not going to build a movement. That's not going to build the organization. It's not going to build individual development in the people in the collective either. You know, it's basically going to, you know, really always keep us disoriented and, you know, trying to figure out what to do next, you know? So I think we're definitely being a lot more conscious of that also, just like our long-term planning, mm-hmm. you know?
And there's some components of our work that are not funded, mm-hmm. which we find to be a good way to actually keep our projects left and alive. Mm-hmm. So
because there was a problem with that, with the nonprofit structure in the 70s, right? With a lot of community groups in the mission, and then having more kind of government funding and then like little strings to be able to pull mm-hmm. with that. Is that right? Or is that not in your experience?
Well, I was born in the 70s.
Yeah, me too.
So but we do know about, you know, there's a lot of poverty pimps who basically get money from the city to do not much of anything. And there's probably organizations who tried to not do that. And, you know, it's certainly, I think the critiques of the nonprofit structure are really readily available in the movement. And probably there's better resources on them than us. But I think for us, we do a certain amount of work volunteer and unpaid or with donations from the community. And that has helped to preserve the autonomy of certain projects that are, you know, maybe we could convince someone to fund it, but maybe we don't want to fuck with someone. Oh, is that okay?
That's right.
Awesome. Well, I like maybe we don't want to. Maybe we don't want to mess with someone, you know, and try to explain to them. Yeah, okay. So this is how the so-called war on terrorism means actually a war on immigrants, you know, and this is how that relates to housing. It's so obvious to us, right? You get displaced out of your country, and then you get displaced out of your apartment, and you get displaced out of your job, and then somehow this has to do with something that got bombed like a few years ago. I don't know, you know. In our community, it's really obvious, and I think that's the strength and the clarity and the vision that we want to respond to, rather than trying to, you know, explain to someone who works in an office that's like 14 floors up on the Embarcadero, and they have like someone who brings them coffee every 2 hours. You know, that's fine. They may need to learn that, but maybe not from us. We have some other work to do.
Awesome. All right. So how long have you been then, Eclective? How long has it been?
Since January.
Woohoo.
This is our...
Fresh.
Coming into our third month.
Oh, wow.
Fourth month. Okay. Just kind of exciting.
So, second trimester?
Like, this is our third month anniversary. Right. I think it might be long term. It's great.
Excellent.
But yeah, so it's pretty exciting. Because we're definitely still working on a lot of things of how to be a collective, you know, how to make a collective. It's definitely not a fourth month process. It's probably going to be a 6 month process or a year process. It's definitely like an everyday process that, you know, we're definitely working on together, which is kind of the great thing about it, that everybody's putting in their experiences, their thoughts, you know, their, you know, basically their, you know, their ideas, their, you know, time and their sweat and whatever, you know, you need to do in order to make it happen. So I think that's something that's...
Why do you think it didn't happen earlier?
Well, the dialectic of development would say you had to do one thing at a time, and one thing had to build on the other. I mean, I've been there long enough to remember when we just did legal services.
Right.
And then when we the first organized building, which was across the street from here, actually, and how that went and the lessons that we learned as a collective. And I remember winning a debate with the director and being like, we should really have a staff meeting, first of all, and we should really have a time to reflect on how that went and what we can learn from it, and like maybe make a model of how to organize a building, you know. And then from that came the idea that we should organize buildings. And then we thought, this is not the only way. We should also have people just join the organization, even if in their building there's not the potential for a struggle. And then, you know, after that we decided, well, we should have collaborations with other groups that have not just tenants, but actually working class people of color that are impacted by the same systems of oppression, by the same dynamics in the system. And then we should have alliances, and we should do anti-war work, and we should do immigration work. And we think that has everything to do with housing, and other people who do, we should have relationships with them. And then, you know, becoming a collective, and all of those are steps along the way. It's kind of like when you think of the first protest you went to, well, that wasn't the first political thing you did. First, there was some uncle who said something about those Yankee bastards are invading our country, and you were like, maybe he's right, you know? And then the second time you saw a poster about it and you read it, and then the third time you took it, you know, it's actually a process of consciousness. And and that happens for individuals, and it happens for collectives. You know, you go through a series of experiences and you build one on the other, and it's sort of like a little spiral of development, you know?
Yeah, and I think we just took also we saw the opportunity definitely for that change. When there was definitely the change in, you know, in staff, you know, when our director, you know, left the organization, I think that was when we were like, well, you know, this is an opportunity. Like, we can either take it, or we can wait on it, or we can just replicate what we have already. So I think it's definitely like seizing the different opportunities that you have in order to be able to create change. And I think that applied to our organization, that we thought, okay, this is an opportunity to do that. You know, we can either continue what we have right now, or we can think about what kind of different, what do we want different? And I think that applies to, you know, it's about anything, you know, that you have to really take those opportunities to see what could come up out of it. I think it's going really well. And I think it was definitely the best choice we could have made. to do that. So.
And we're crossing our fingers and having meetings and doing all our work the best we can. And we're also open to the possibility that maybe it's going to look different at some point, you know. Certainly none of us, at the beginning, I didn't predict we'd become a collective, you know. And so I think what we're able to come up with together is so much stronger than what we can individually envision, that we're trusting that a lot more now. And, you know, I think all of us are really hoping that this works out and that we find something useful that we can share with the community and also with other groups of people that are actually trying to make, you know, change in the world. So
awesome. Anything else you want to say? I think we should probably wrap up.
What? I'm okay.
You're okay?
Like, yeah. But, you know, thank you for having us. And yeah, just definitely. I think thank you for having this show. It's about collectives. And I think definitely about collectives is that, like I said, I think it just creates a really good level of just trust within your comrades. But also, I think it just, it develops more like your personal commitment to just, you know, to basically creating a different world, to creating a movement, you know, because definitely it you have to think about it a lot before you become a collective. And I think the decision was what the most important decision that we made as the first decision we made as a collective was to become a collective. So I think that was a really decision that was made after really evaluating within ourselves, like, you know, what do we really want?
Totally. And we decided bosses. That sounds like bullshit.
Like, let's get rid of that.
All right. Hey, well, thanks a lot for being on the show. Again, this is DJ Sweetie with In the Meantime. I've been talking to Lupe Maria from St. Peter's Housing Committee and here in San Francisco, California. And we're going to be back on the air in 2 weeks, next Tuesday, with another guest talking about collectives. And I'm not sure who that guest is going to be. But thanks for joining us on enemycombatantradio.net.